Blog Talk Radio. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties a moment ago. We had some problems with the show creation page. Apparently, when I changed it, the direction 1590, the site did not for some reason. So we were looking at a 15-minute show. So that hasn't changed. So we are good to go. So with that in mind, coming to you live from the Classic City, Athens, Georgia, this is Arthur Balin. And coming to you from an undisclosed location somewhere in the United States of America, the immortal Patrick Toppin.
How are you doing, Arthur?
I am good. Apparently, the internet hates me.
It does, yeah. I cannot. You are breaking up like hell.
That's not good.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll just persevere and, I don't know, maybe BCI Radio will figure it all out. But I'd say we have a lot to talk about, but we don't really have a lot to talk about. I mean, the good news is that Boston College managed to avoid what probably would have been the most embarrassing two-week stretch of football in the last 10 years by almost any team. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if they lost to Rutgers and Kansas, that would have been unforgivable.
In back-to-back weeks, that's like a fireable offense. So, good job. Everything is not on fire, but it isn't necessarily that good. I would say, Arthur, your impressions from the win, just sort of off the top, you know, first thoughts.
It was an ugly win, and it was definitely a win that was kind of, I guess ugly win is probably the best way to put it. BC did what they had to do. It was not a comfortable win by any means, but BC got the job done.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree. I like sort of, we said last week that in order for this to be sort of a win that I couldn't have too much wrong with, it had to be by at least two scores. And that is exactly what we got. We got a two-score win, 14 points, 30-16. Anthony Brown was pretty underwhelming, but got the job done. A.J. Dillon and David Bailey both continued to be a stud. That was my – like, honestly, like, my impressions of the offense leaving the game was basically like, well, it's a good thing we have two very talented running backs, and that will win us at least two more games, in my opinion, in the season. Like, that should, by themselves, they provide enough offense to win those games. A.J. Dillon, in my opinion, looked to have his best game this season just because he seemed like he was really back to his normal self. I thought he's had some issues sort of getting consistency, and he's had games where he's put up more rushing yards, but my general opinion was that a lot of those times, those games are skewed by one, like, 65-yard run. And this time, you know, his longest run was 15 yards. He just pounded the hole, got good chunk plays, kept the chains moving, and allowed the offense to do what it needed to do. So, you know, he looked great. Obviously, David Bailey had that long run and the touchdown, continues to put up good stats in a backup role and relatively limited usage. Yeah, they ran the ball 61 times for over 250 yards. Like, it's what you do.
Yeah, A.J. Dillon definitely had a game that will go down as probably one of the better games on the season. And it's pretty clear that BC's rushing attack is at least back to where it should have been after some struggles. AJ Dillon had a good game last week, but the rushing attack just in general, like outside of AJ Dillon, looks like it's about where it needs to be as of right now. The issue now, I think, comes back to Anthony Brown, because after a really solid game against Virginia Tech, he has kind of fallen off the cliff.
Statistically, or just the way he looks? Because my general impression is he's about where I would agree. He's sort of.
That game is the only good looking.
And I don't really see anything else where I'm like, wow, that's a. Yeah, so I mean, like, if you want to go over his stats, basically, since the Virginia Tech game against Richmond, 8 for 14 for 163 yards. But wasn't asked to do a whole lot in that game. Kansas, 18 for 36 for 195 yards, 50%. And then Rutgers, 13 for 25 for 160 yards. He's not proving to be an asset on the playmaking. And I'll give him, grant him, he's made some pretty throws, but the consistency has not been there at the level that I think Boston College fans expected, especially coming out of that first game. If you had told me that he was going to complete, you know, 60% of his passes, throw for 250 yards a game, like that would be the solid starter that I think this team needs to win. But he has not been that since Virginia Tech. And in retrospect, the Virginia Tech win looks worse and worse as every week goes by.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, you know, the backup quarterback this week for Rutgers outdueled the three-year starter. And we can sort of dive in a little bit into that, because I do want to talk about the defense and sort of the struggles that BC had in pass coverage and as the secondary woes continue. But defense aside, the backup quarterback for Rutgers, Artur Sitkowski, absolutely tore apart the BC defense. And in contrast, Anthony Brown did not look like he was there. And the issue is, you know, what should we be expecting from Anthony Brown? I mean, at this point, he's a third-year starter. He's had a ton of time to sort of mature under Steve Adazio's tutelage. And he's still not there, and he's still struggling, and he's still not looking like an ACC level quarterback.
So to me, I guess there's two things that I look at here when I'm assessing what I think of Anthony Brown, because it seems clear to me that he's not where he's wanted fans or probably the coaching staff both want him to be. He's had a lot of issues on some of the intermediate and short range throws. He's got a really nice long ball that he can put good touch on. But like I said, the consistency is not there. That's what it takes to win football games. What I would expect out of him is what I said. I would expect by this point him to be completing 60% of his passes a game, because 50% passing a game is like promising freshman, if that makes sense. Like that is a, hey, we'll probably be really good in 2 years, and here we are later. And Anthony Brown, honestly, like, he's still kind of a one read quarterback, is what I like to say. Is he looks like, if he has a clip for a long time for his reads, when anything sort of wrong, it's improvise and maybe hope for the best. And that's, I think, why he struggled so much, is he's not making his reads and he's not seeing the whole field as someone who's been starting for 3 years should.
Yeah, I mean, I think it hits the nail right on the head. And the issue is now you have to look ahead and at Anthony Brown and say, how much upside do you have left on this kid?
That leads me to the second question, which is, who do you place him with?
Well, that's a big concern.
Because quite frankly, you know, say, you know, the team decides to move on from Anthony Brown after this year. I don't think they will. I think that Adazio trusts Anthony Brown. You've seen him have games, right? We're going to the Wake Forest game this year. We've seen, like, last year against Wake Forest, Anthony Brown threw for, like, 400 yards and 5 touchdowns and looked like the savior sort of wanted him to be. And really done that since. But if you look at the depth chart, you know, Dennis Grossel is not a starting quarterback, right? Now, and probably not ever. As I don't want to be hurtful to the kid, but I don't think, you know, I don't think he's the future. Matt Valisi is more of a runner than anything else and is not going to be, I think, you know, maybe has some promise and could develop, but if he develops like Anthony Brown does, there's nothing there. And then Sam Johnson, who they've really indicated they really want to use their redshirt on, is 100% not going to be the quarterback this year and, you know, could potentially compete for the spot next year, but that's 8 plus games away. So, you know, at this point, Anthony Brown is the starter for the year unless he just absolutely implodes, which I don't think he will, because I think he's not really high. He doesn't have that high of a ceiling anymore, but he also has a pretty high floor, right? Like, you know what you get with him. And so, yes.
And the thing is, too, with Anthony Brown is as bad as he has been, I don't think he's quite as well before he's, like, outwardly costing you games. So, like, I think mediocrity kind of will be the thing that kind of – well, the acceptable level of play moving forward for Anthony Brown. Because I think Anthony already had – there's nobody behind him that you really can feel comfortable with. And David Azure needs to think about the future as well when you're looking at, like, Sam Johnson. And this is not really a good time for you to burn a redshirt. And I'm really concerned about burning a redshirt on a true freshman anyway.
The only reason I would expect Sam Johnson to play this year is if BC enters the final stretch and is making 3 and 5? Right.
That sounds right.
And he would have the chance to use that 4 games of play to sort of see what he has in Johnson and see if he's developed at all or see if he's a better option going forward. That is the only way I can see him or Valisi playing this year, quite frankly. It's just not going to happen. Wake Anthony Brown is the starter for the foreseeable future, and I don't think that's a good thing, but I think it's the best that BC can ask for right now, because he's just probably the best quarterback on the roster. And I agree that eventually there has to be a point when maybe you start thinking about moving on, but right now is not the time you start having that conversation with the rest of your coaching staff. So, aside from that,
is too, everything's kind of slated right now for Anthony Brown to be the starter. Like your quarterback in waiting is not where it needs to be a starter, and your backups aren't at the level they need to be either. So like BC and Steven Azure really kind of put all their eggs in the Anthony Brown basket, and it's not really panning out for them. But also, again, it could also be worse.
True. I'd also say I don't think the guys who left, like EJ Perry, and who's the guy who went to Bowling Green? I'm totally blanking on his name right now. I don't know. The whole host of quarterbacks who have transferred out, in my opinion, weren't that talented either. I don't think they were going to be. They might have been slightly more competent backup quarterbacks this year in the event that Anthony Brown were to go down with an injury and someone needed to cover him for a few games. But they're not guys who are going to win you football games. At best, they could have been guys who were not going to lose you football games. And so, yes, whether you like it or not, whether you do or do not like Anthony Brown, he's just the best that BC can ask for right now. And with any luck, he sort of finds rhythm here in the next couple of games. But also, I wouldn't necessarily think that seems super likely against a pretty good Wake Forest defense. So, moving on to the defense, Arthur, what were your thoughts? Obviously, there were a lot of issues again. In my opinion, it seems like it was solid. BC has so many issues with staying in their gaps, wrapping up tackling, and biting on option and play action plays are the three things that I would say. And they all basically come down to discipline. Discipline and tackling is BC's problem right now. And that's part of the effects of youth in the secondary. But also, I think what's concerning to me is that I see these issues occurring in a relatively experienced linebacking core.
It's really time to sort of panic on the defense right now, because now we've had three straight games where the defense has looked, pretty terrible. And that should be concerning to any fan. I think you're absolutely right about the linebacking core, but let's not discount how bad like the secondary has been. It has been atrocious. And again, I keep coming back to this, like a very mediocre quarterback just tore up that secondary on Saturday. He was completing his passes, he was getting good looks, getting good reads, and it was to the point where you wonder if like what kind of resistance the BC secondary is able to put up in any situation.
I do want to say, however, I want to counter that by sort of going, I mean, listen, the secondary has not looked good. They've looked really, really, really young, and they've been shown that they can make a play or two, but they've shown that they can't make it consistently, and that's definitely concerning. But what I looked at when I was watching sort of the replays and all that, and sort of wasn't just watching the game anymore, the linebackers have are having a really, really, like Max Richardson is having a very, very hard time covering running backs, right? Like Raheem Blackshear on the play where Blackshear caught a reception and took it 74 yards to the house was a sort of soft block slip out in front of the offensive line, catch and run. Like that is 100% on the linebacking core, and you cannot blame the secondary for that one. And I think that's been the other issue, is that like passes to running backs has proven very, very effective, because once the pass has been completed against this linebacking core, the secondary can't tackle or make those tackles in space that they need to make it just a 10 or 15 yard gain instead of a 70 yard gain.
Right, and I think the issue, too, is, like, again, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It wasn't necessarily the big play again, although there was that one Blackshear pass. Blackshear pass. But it was sort of like the medium range plays where, like, Stasky was able to, like, to sort of pick off receivers and just sort of keep the ball moving, because again that's dangerous as well.
Yeah, I agree, and I think I think the real issue to me is the fact that a lot of these yards are coming in obvious passing downs. Like I give credit to BC, right? BC held them to 4 of 15 on third downs. Hold Rutgers 4 of 15 on third downs, which is pretty solid, but they still allowed. Like those are always going to be obvious passing things, especially when you're averaging 9 yards per passing attempt. Why wouldn't you expect more passes? Especially because they didn't really have a good game running it, right? They had 20,
no, absolutely not. I was actually just about to say,
yeah, 26 rushing attempts for 76 yards. Like that's barely 3 yards a carry. They're getting teams into third and medium pretty often, and on those obvious passing downs, they're just not holding their end of the deal, basically. And I think, yeah, I agree. The fact that Arthur Sitkowski, who is a true sophomore backup quarterback who has played pretty few meaningful snaps, and when he has played has not looked particularly good, allowing him to pass for 250, 270 yards on 60% completion is not good.
No, and the issue is, I'm looking ahead, you know, Rutgers is a team where the running attack isn't going to be particularly strong. The secondary needs to shape up before, like, playing some harder ACC competition, because the road only gets harder from here. And it just feels like the offense, or excuse me, the defense is just woefully unprepared.
I agree. BC is coming out of what looks to be what will undoubtedly be its easiest 3-game stretch of Richmond, Kansas, and Rutgers, having given up insane passing numbers in all three of those games. Adjusted, of course, right? Like, obviously, you know, Richmond didn't put up insane passing stats, but for what you expect out of Richmond, that they're not great. So, very disappointing. And I think we all knew this was going to be the case coming in the year, but I think that this Virginia Tech game with 5 turnovers. I think set the expectations for the secondary too high. And that is simply a shame, kind of, but it's going to be a long season. I'll be honest, this week against Wake Forest, I have very, very, very low expectations. And quite frankly, I expect Jamie Newman to shred this defense.
Yeah, I mean, going into the season, I think, again, we knew that the secondary wasn't going to be particularly good. But I don't think we really expected this. I don't think anybody could reasonably expect this because, you know, I said at the beginning of the season, you know, if you can give DiVitazio one thing, it's that his defenses have usually been pretty good. But it's just the secondary, the defense in general, but particularly the secondary, is just kind of falling off a cliff.
With the loss of three guys in the NFL, one solid nickel starter, and the loss of your incredibly, incredibly talented and effective secondary coach and Anthony Campanelli. Like, I knew there was going to be a drop off. I did not expect it to be this steep, and I did not expect there to be this
right.
Lack of depth, because it's all so young and none of these guys have played meaningful snaps. And so, on one hand, I don't think Adazio could have prepared for Hamp Cheevers to go pro after his junior year, when I don't think anyone had him going in the draft. He ended up going undrafted. But, like, it's been bad. And the problem is that the rest of the defense hasn't sort of picked up the slack, because you can have a young and inexperienced secondary if you have a defensive line and a linebacking core that sort of makes up for it. But as the linebacking core continues to sort of bite on play fakes and option plays, and the defense line sort of continues to not get pressure the way that we'd probably like them to, it's going to just put too much pressure and too much stress on your young secondary, and they're going to break really, really easily. I mean, like, just looking at it, BC had 0 sacks and no hurries in the last game. And I refuse to believe that Chris Ash is a good enough offensive coordinator to scheme his way out of pressure. Like, that is just a failure by the Boston College defense.
Yeah, and we'll move ahead towards Wake Forest, because I think the conversation is going to naturally progress there. You mentioned Jamie Newman. He's throwing 319 yards per game. Now, granted, he hasn't really played a particularly good competition yet. It's been the two that teams that jump out are Utah State and North Carolina, which are not exactly football powerhouses.
I know, man.
But you're still facing a really good quarterback.
I think – all right, so my notes are basically, and I think this is fair to say, I think Jamie Newman is probably the most underrated quarterback in the ACC and potentially the country, because he is putting up some pretty bonkers stats. And
– he already has over 1,000 yards.
Yes, well over 1,000 yards. He has
yeah.
nearly 1,300 yards in 4 games. And that's right. So here's to read off the stat line is like a solid. It's like a video game on rookie. He is completing 70. 1% of his passes for 1,300 yards. He averages 9.5 yards per attempt, and he has 12 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And to be honest, he has some pretty talented receivers, but none of them are game breakers. It's not like he's just chucking them up all to the same guy. Right? The only guy I could possibly be is Sage Surratt. He put up a monster game against Elon. Sorry, against UNC. And then has just good games against Elon and Utah State. Like this is a quarterback who reminds me personally of comparison that draws to mind, one that probably some of our listeners won't get, and some of then one that everyone will, is he's Jake Locker, who played at Washington, like a good running quarterback who can take it with the passes, or he's Cam Newton. Right? He's built like a linebacker. He runs the ball. He manipulates the pocket. He can complete passes on the run. He's got great arm strength. He's just really, really good. And I'm terrified of him if I'm the BC defense. I'm terrified of him and I'm not playing. No.
He has thrown for an average of 319 yards per game, which is his average. He's averaging that.
Against better defenses than what BC is going to throw at him. Because BC now ranks near the bottom in defensive efficiency. And then you combine it. They've got a stable of pretty solid running backs who are certainly able to. I mean, look at the tape. Like, Cade Kearney's like this bowling ball of a running back. And then he's got two wide receivers in Sage and Scotty Washington, who's got great hands and good body control. So, like, it's looking to be really, really, really bad. And then
Wake Forest has the ability to absolutely beat up on BC defense if they want to.
I'm not even sure. Like, I've read a couple things that were saying, hey, man, like, this game might be a pick'em. I don't think it's a pick'em right now.
No.
Right? Wake Forest is favored by 7, and if I personally was a betting man, I would hammer that. I would take Wake by, like, 14, and I'd also, they are going to shred this BC defense, and it really, really pains me to say that, because Wake Forest for the last couple of years has been roughly the equal of BC, but I don't think this game is going to look particularly close once sort of the second half gets rolling.
Yeah, I mean, number one, I think people who are like thinking about the pick'em are looking at it like it's a home game for BC, yada, yada, yada. Let's also put aside for seconds Parents Weekend, so I don't think the crowd's going to be particularly raucous. You can't discount home field for a horrible mismatch, and that's what you have with the defense, with BC defense against Wake Forest offense. Again, Wake Forest can absolutely pulverize a defense as bad as the BC defense has been. And you look on the flip side, we've been talking about how good, how the running attack and rushing attack for BC has been solid, but you're also going into that game with what you can only confidently say is a one-dimensional offense. If Anthony Brown can sort of have one of his wonders games, one of the best games he had last year was against Wake Forest on the road. So he definitely has that capability against a team like Wake Forest. But the issue is you still have a one-dimensional offense. And that is concerning. And that should be concerning to anybody who is going to be betting on this game.
If I was rooting for BC, yeah. And I think, the other issue is that the Wake Forest defense matches up really well with the BC offense. Like, their corners are, to me, they're nothing to write home about, crazy, if that makes sense. They're nothing. Like, they're talented. They're good. They're not going to be the weakest unit BC faces all year. But, this linebacking core is led by Justin Strenad, who already has, 40 tackles, 15 for a loss, multiple for a loss, they swarm the ball. Like, everyone on this defense or whatever, everyone in this linebacking core is like 6'4", 250. So, like, they're built to tackle ball handlers. And they just play really well as a unit. Like, I was watching the game, the non-conference game between North Carolina and Wake Forest, which is really weird to think about because they're both in the ACC. But they scheduled an out-of-conference.
How did the ACC let that happen, by the way?
Why did the ACC let it happen?
Yeah, I can see why that, like, why they would, but, like, the idea of having two member schools play each other in a non-conference game just kind of seems not kosher to me.
I mean, it's fine because, I mean, they're historical rivals. They're one of the oldest rivalries in football. Not, like, a necessarily, like, storied or, like, great rivalry, but definitely one of the older ones. And because they play in separate divisions and they're not the chosen cross-division alignment sort of deal, they only play each other once every 4 years. And so they wanted to play more often, so they scheduled, I think, two home-and-homes. So I'm actually all for it. I would love to see more teams play sort of not more, but, like, keep these sort of divisional rivalries alive. Because they're fun, and, like, I don't know, it's still two Power 5 conference teams going against each other. I totally am. I'm for it, but beside the point, this Wake Forest defense did not allow a third down conversion until late in the fourth quarter. And UNC, so they lost to UNC 24-18. UNC was never in this game. They, like, put up a lot of points at, like, the very end or whatever, but, like, this game was, like, clearly controlled by Wake Forest from start to finish. And I feel like if BC is going to, like, if BC wants to cover, it's going to be a garbage time touchdown is what it's going to be. They're just better than BC is in basically every facet. Maybe not, except for running back. And they've got a stable of three really, really talented guys in Kenneth Walker, Cade Carney, and Christian Beal-Smith, who all pretty much evenly split carries. But if I'm going to point to one thing that has me terrified for this game, and if you're listening to this, I urge you, like, go, all of Wake Forest games are condensed and on YouTube for whatever reason. They and Rutgers have a really passionate fan base who just condenses all the games and puts them online for anyone who wants to see them. I cannot do the same thing for BC. In my time watching football, I have not seen a quarterback who is so effective at pulling the ball out of the running back's hands on, like, a play action or an option play at the last second. And for a BC defense that has struggled with its discipline and containing the edge against these mobile quarterbacks, it is going to be absolutely lethal. Because unless the BC defense suddenly fixes all of that, he's just going to have a field day. And that's pretty much as simple as it gets.
So we talked a little bit about the game. What are you predicting moving forward?
For the game?
Yeah.
Well, I think BC is going to put up some points. I think that even though the defense matches up well, I think Anthony Brown is going to get there's going to be enough sort of big plays, and I think that AJ Dillon is going to wear it down. So I expect BC to put up at least like 24. So I'm guessing like final score like 42 or 38-24 Wake Forest. That's my final.
I say 42 to maybe 17.
Really? You think BC only puts up three scores? All right.
Yeah, it's just my concern is, the BC offense just seems so one-dimensional at this point. I just don't know what to expect from them.
Yeah, so to me, the way that BC wins this game is, you know, like most times, they win the turnover battle. But I think the easiest way to do that against a quarterback who's this accurate is that in the game film that I did review, Newman does have some ball security issues. He carries the ball like a baguette on the way back from the bakery, right? If you remember, like, how, like, Michael Vick carries the ball, he sort of does that a lot. She had multiple fumbles against Utah State and North Carolina that were called back because of penalties unrelated to the fumble, like holding down the field by the and so I think, to me, the way that BC wins this game, in a way they sort of negate the RPO, is they basically have to have one guy designed to hit Jamie Newman on more or less every play, right? Every option play, you got to make sure someone gets a hand on him. You got to get him a little bit scared to run. You got to get him thinking about it. You got to get that ball knocked out of there, because to me, that's the only, like, a few extra possessions for BC, to me, is the only way that BC wins this game.
Well, with that, do you have anything else?
No, I mean, if any of our listeners are going to be at the San Francisco Game Watch this Saturday at Shanghai Kelly's in San Francisco, I'll be there with my roommate from Sacramento. We're coming down. We're going to go see the Cal football game on Friday night and then make our way over to San Francisco on Saturday afternoon. So, presumably just look for the dude in the Superfan shirt. That'll be fun. And looking forward to, I hope it's a good game. I hope it's competitive, but I'm still a fan. But I just, as from the analytical perspective, I just don't see BC pulling this one out. So, Steve Adazio and co, please prove me wrong.
And with that, we'll call it a wraps on this week's episode of BCI Radio. Once again, enjoy all the games this weekend. Be responsible and go Eagles.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw.